Hello, my name is Colleen Dietz.
And I'm Miranda Crandall. We are the Angels on Fire.
And this is Mormon Happy Hour. We are two post-Mormon gals bringing you the hottest topics in Mormonism. We will keep you current, keep you entertained, and keep you tuned in.
Welcome to episode 7.
On today's episode, we will be covering a few posts that we found relevant on Reddit. We will be talking about interesting talks in sacrament meeting and some boundary crossing issues. And then, of course, we cannot miss the opportunity to cover the First Presidency secession and the departure of the Silver Fox.
But first, let's talk about coffee and alcohol. So I wanted to reiterate a couple of different coffee options. There is one that I love that I didn't get to talk about before. It's called a breve. So a breve will be the espresso. Instead of using steamed milk, you will have half and half. So you can get a mocha. Remember, mocha means chocolate. So you'll have your espresso, your chocolate. You can get a mocha latte, which will use milk, or a mocha breve, which will use half and half. So it'll be way creamier, probably sweeter. And then again, the latte is just the espresso with your steamed milk. And any of these drinks, depending on where you're buying them from or how you're making them, you can add flavorings and sugars. My favorite is probably a vanilla cookie breve from Dutch Brothers. So I just was able to talk to a doctor about alcohol use, and she told me that more than 2 to 3 drinks a week is considered heavy drinking.
A week?
Yeah, 2 to 3 drinks a week. So I told her, I usually only drink, this is honest, by the way, I only drink probably 2 to 3 drinks a week, but on one night. And she said that was fine. And especially for women, that's probably the max that you want to be doing so you're not causing liver damage.
Interesting. Right. I was unaware.
Yeah. And for men, I think the threshold is slightly higher, but not much. Mm-hmm. That being said, she told me that some people can have liver damage who don't drink every day. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the person. Some people have a higher tolerance for it. Others don't. So just be responsible. Never drink and drive. And if you think you might have a drinking problem, be sure to seek help for that.
This week, Sam Young has made the news again with his petition to protect the children. Just this week, Sam hosted a press conference in Salt Lake where he had two guest speakers and himself talk about the importance of ceasing the practice of asking our children in private with bishops questions about their sexual behaviors. And it's a really moving conference. I definitely recommend you checking it out. I will be putting a link to the video of the press conference in the show notes. So definitely watch it. It's amazing. Also, he announced in that press conference their plans to, they're planning a march on to church headquarters to provide the church with the petition on March 31st. So the deadline for getting all of your friends and passing around the link to that petition, they'll be presenting it on March 31st. So make sure you sign it before then. Right now, that petition is at 11,000 signatures. So it's
good
doing,
for him.
It's doing That's fantastic. Great. So my favorite post on Reddit X Mormon this week, it was epic. It's wonderful. Miranda, you haven't heard it yet, have you?
No, I haven't.
Oh my gosh, it's so great. Okay, so the user Dan Alive and Dead shared this quaint little story. A couple of years ago, his wife and himself moved into a new ward, and as is customary when you move into a new ward, they were asked to speak in sacrament meeting.
Okay.
So he accepted, and he that Sunday, he brought a cooler with him up onto the stand to wait for his time to speak.
Okay.
And in his cooler, he had a family pack of Oreos, he had a glass, and he had a gallon of milk.
What?
This is great. So when his time to speak came, he walked up to the pulpit. He got out his glass. He got out the Oreos. Got out the gallon of milk. Opened up the Oreos and turned around and offered some Oreos to the bishopric, who accepted and ate the Oreos. And then he proceeded to basically give this totally bullshit talk where he had like some great points that he made, but they were like not like, you know, based in scripture.
So his points, were they like ex-Mormon-esque or like believing-esque?
So I'll skim through a couple of them.
Because he's obviously, he's on, you know, ex-Mormon Reddit.
Oh, I should clarify. He was already mentally out by the time they moved into this ward.
Okay, so he's mentally out and he still is giving a talk and he's eating Oreos in sacrament meeting on the stand. Okay.
So he says, I then started giving my talk while eating Oreos. So he's eating, he has mouthfuls of Oreos while he's giving his talk, which is also amazing. I talked about how I applied for jobs for 2 hours every night while in my last semester of school and how I had received 7 offers while most of my friends had only received 1 or 2. I ate some more Oreos, but didn't really acknowledge them. The congregation was completely transfixed and confused. I talked about the small and simple habits in school that allowed me to get straight A's while living a normal life, being married, having children, and working a job. And I ate more Oreos. I talked about playing the lottery, how it would take 35,000 lifetimes on average to win, how investing that money in the stock market instead would net you a worth of $363,000 at retirement.
That's good.
And I ate more Oreos. So he kind of goes on. And so his entire talk is just like bullshit facts that could improve your life but have nothing to do with the church.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And then he ended it by bearing something that sounded like a testimony while it testified of absolutely nothing.
Okay. All right. Okay, let's hear
Here, this is the best tidbit he shared. I talked about the Oreos, that each Oreo contains 53 calories, and how the decision to eat just one Oreo a day is the difference between gaining or losing 5.5 pounds a year. And I closed with a carefully worded testimony that said nothing of the truthfulness of the church, but which didn't give me away either. And I was never asked to give a talk again, which is what I wanted the whole time.
Okay, that's a little genius. That's a little genius right there. Way to go, Oreo guy.
Oh, man. Well, we love you, Dan, alive and dead. That was great. So, we are always on the look for these wonderful, happy, uplifting,
hilarious
tidbits that kind of filter through the ex-Mormon world. So if you find any, please
throw them our way.
Definitely. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter. And our Facebook group is amazing. So if you're not there, get there. All right. So the next tidbit that I found on Reddit is a little bit of a different feel. So this one is brought to us by the Reddit user Mikasi. And she shares a story of one Sunday, she was living in BYU-approved housing. She's a UVU student, which is the Utah Valley University, which is in Orem, kind of right down the hill from Provo. So she's living in BYU-approved housing. Her roommates are BYU students. It was a Sunday. She was home. She doesn't attend church. She hasn't in quite some time. She hears a knock on the door, and she was in her room and just
ignoring it.
And then she hears another knock and hears the door open. And then hears someone yell her name through the apartment. And so she gets up and walks out. And there is what turns out to be a counselor in the bishopric and the ward clerk standing there.
In her house, uninvited.
In her living room, calling out her name when she's just in her room, in her bed, minding her own business. And so
she could have been in the shower for all they knew.
She could have been naked.
That's
it's her
disgusting.
Apartment.
Yeah. It's like, awful.
It's awful. So
entering anybody's apartment or house without their permission is just disgusting and horrible.
And I'm thinking back, like the first time I read it, she made the post immediately after it happened. So it was like raw, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this just happened. And like I'm reflecting back and I'm like, man, when I lived in BYU approved housing, when I went to BYU, I don't know that I even would have like thought twice about it. And these are the thoughts that I'm having is like being like part of Mormon culture desensitizes you to things that you should absolutely be like that should send off your creep vibe and be like, that's not okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it definitely desensitizes you to like, oh, well, that's the member of your bishopric. Like they're harmless.
I don't know. I don't know if I would have felt that way. I would have been offended that they did not wait until I invited them in. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's easy to say, oh, I would have done this if I was in that situation. But, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't in that situation. So I don't know what I would have done.
Yeah. I definitely think that I wouldn't have even thought twice. Like, if something like that happened, if members of my ward or bishopric walked into my dorm room when I was at BYU, I guarantee you I wouldn't even remember to tell you today, because I wouldn't have even thought twice about it. But yeah. How disgusting is that for men to be walking? Like, she's a co-ed. She's a college student. She's young. Right.
And how they did not realize how inappropriate that was.
Right. So it gets better. So they're calling her name. So she walks out and just says, "That's not me. I'm not who you're looking for." And then she just stood there until they got awkward and turned around and left. And that was the end of it. So in the post on Reddit, there's a lot of advice like, oh, you need to call the police, which I definitely think is a really good solution in this situation. Because if it were any random person that you had never met, which is
right.
She had never met
for
these
any
men,
reason, yeah,
to walk into your house, whether they know your first name or not, is completely inappropriate. And a lot of people are like, well, that's a good way to get shot. And I completely agree, because if it were any other situation, that's home invasion.
Yeah.
Like, you don't just walk into a stranger's house. That's never acceptable.
Right.
And then my favorite in the comments, which is another story for another day, but someone had to go out and say, what is she? Do you guys think that someone's just going to come into her apartment and rape her in broad daylight? And thank goodness that comment has like a million downvotes, because it does.
It does happen.
I was there. It happened. Like, yes. Yeah. Yes. So luckily someone did say, okay, I'll spend 5 minutes on Google. And they just a whole slew of Salt Lake Trib articles on rape at BYU. And luckily, that has been big in the news in the past couple of years. And so there were, a plethora of articles.
Yeah.
So I'm really grateful for that commenter that put that person in their place. So I followed up with this poster because I wanted to know the rest of the story. She's really busy in school. So she looked into filing a police report, which this is another problem, complaint I have with the system, is that it is very difficult to file a police report. And it wasn't something that she had the time to do, but she did email her state president, explain the situation, and told him that if it ever happens again, that she will be contacting the police, which right. I'm really glad that she did that.
My issue, though, is if things do continue to happen, if there are other incidents in the future, then you have this incident on police record that it happened before. Yes. And so I was really hoping that she could have made a report, but I understand she doesn't have time. There's 100 other reasons why you can move on from this and hope it never happens, and I hope it does never happen.
Absolutely. So her state president responded. So in the state president's email, he clarified that it was actually, originally she thought it was the bishop. So he clarified to say that it was the counselor and the ward clerk. And he also emailed her parents to explain the situation. So now they know that she has no idea what her bishop looks like and that she is basically inactive. So that's kind of a bummer that she got outed, because that's not a really okay thing to do. I did ask her how the state president had her bishop's email or her parents' email address. To which she kind of gave an explanation that her dad's very active in the church still, and he has a calling that may provide her some visibility, or him some visibility.
I don't know. They still have to do a little bit of digging for that, though.
It's
right?
creepy. It's yeah. creepy. So I feel like the stake president either purposely went out of his way to find her parents' email address, because she doesn't really know how it happened.
Right. Well, I'm wondering, why is he emailing her parents
anyway? She's an adult. Yeah. Like, why do her parents need to be involved in this situation?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's completely inappropriate. He said that the bishop would be doing some training with the gentleman that walked into her apartment and make sure it doesn't happen again. And they ended by saying that he's sure that their intentions were well-meaning. Which I really have a problem with that, because that just goes back to the whole attitude that members of the church have that, everyone has the best intentions at heart and no one will ever, ever hurt you.
Right.
And that naive attitude that is reflected in the comment that we mentioned earlier, like, what do you think is going to happen? Well, exactly what you just said. Right. Yeah. That happens. It's real.
Right.
So I definitely think that this is one of those situations where boundaries were crossed, attitudes are way too cavalier and naive, and it creates a safe haven for predators. Even not to say that these men were going to hurt her, but the attitude that walking into someone's apartment is okay, unacceptable.
Right. Unacceptable.
So the next story that we found on Reddit to cover involves a note. It was an invitation for this poster's daughter to attend New Beginnings, which New Beginnings is an annual event that goes on in Young Women's. Attached was a questionnaire that the daughter was to fill out. This was the text convo following between my wife and the lady. How do I get this bishop's email so I can tell him this has to stop? So the text message reads, in reference to the New Beginnings flyer left on the gate, addressed to, those are redacted, we are not members of the Mormon Church. Please stop leaving things on our door. Thank you. So I believe these are actually like resigned members of the church.
Right.
The response from the young woman leader that left the note on the gate is simply, we can though.
Wow. Ridiculous.
So he, I think this is the wife. The wife responded, we are a happily pagan agnostic household, and these are unwanted intrusions addressed to my underage daughter who has never been a member of your church, nor does she desire contact. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. And then the member of the church says, please stop texting me.
Yeah, that's, you're harassing me. Stop texting me. Oh.
You're attacking me with your
But we your can, unbelief. We can leave flyers on your garage, right. On your door.
And so the response was, stop leaving things on my door and I will.
Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
And again, the reason why I wanted to highlight this post is because, again, it went along with the last one that just, it indicates these total lack of appropriate boundaries that occur within the church and wards on a local level.
Yeah.
During this episode, I wanted to introduce a brand new segment that we have called Faith Destroying Rumors.
Woohoo!
So what a faith destroying rumor is, I wanted to kind of take you back to when we were members of the church. And you remember when you would hear these wonderful stories of someone that was healed or brought back from death's door or some other great, amazing faith promoting rumor, which is what my mother used to call them, that was completely unverifiable bullshit and probably wasn't true, but man, it felt good to believe it.
Right.
So I wanted to kind of bring that back into our lives again because they were so much fun. So we have faith destroying rumors, which are the same caliber of completely bullshit, unverifiable rumors that, man, you wish they were true because it makes you feel good inside. So what I wanted to start off with for today is doing a lot of research and reading a lot of social media reaction to Uchtdorf being kind of ousted from the first presidency, which we will definitely cover in a later segment. One of the rumors that I've been hearing in response to him signing the November 2015 exclusion policy, the rumor is that he was out of town when that document was signed and that his signature is auto pen. So he didn't actually authorize the November 15 policy.
So there's possibly he's a good guy. And maybe he's just the most progressive and he's so great and so handsome.
So this to me is one of those examples of like, that's total, complete, and utter bullshit. And I feel like people are just making up reasons to support what they want to believe so bad.
And I mean, let's stretch and say, what if this is true? Okay. He's still in the first presidency of the church and running everything and still promoting bad
policy. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to tell you about a couple that I have coming to clean my house once a week. Mm-hmm. You're never going to believe it. I got a knock on my door one day and the sister missionaries tracked me out. So I was like, oh yeah, I did this great thing. And I had the sister missionaries come over and help me clean the house because I had just had a baby. I'm going to ask them. And so I did. I'm like, hey, well, you can come back and help me clean.
Right.
And that would be great.
So do they give you a message?
No. And I was very explicit with them that I'm never coming back to church, but that I would love to interact with them because I do. I do really enjoy talking to them.
Wow.
So they come over. They help me clean. We just like, you know.
Is it like a weekly thing? Do they come over every week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Once a week. And we, you know, sometimes I'll have something planned. Like, I really need help with this particular house cleaning task. Or it's just like, okay, I need help with the dishes and wiping my counters and then they leave.
Wow. That's fantastic.
So.
Look at you. Good Samaritan over here.
So, and they have been
making these poor girls clean.
While, and this is why I really wanted to talk about it on the podcast, As I kind of warmed him up the first time.
Uh-huh.
Second time, I dropped the bomb that I host a Mormon podcast. Brother.
The second time.
The second time. And then this past time, I'm like, okay, I'm just going to do it. So I just, you know, bulleted through the things we were going to talk about and got their reaction. And then, and I always like share with them, you know, my opinions, and I try and keep it pretty
mild.
Progressive, not anti. Okay. Okay.
That's one way to put it.
And I love it. Like one time, two times ago, so when I told them I had the podcast and they actually asked me, well, what kind of things do you talk about on the podcast? I'm like, oh, you didn't.
Oh.
Here we go. And so I told them about the petition that my friend had started. So the Sam Young petition, and I kind of told them how I felt about how it was inappropriate to ask children about sexual things, blah, blah, blah. And they had a couple of pushbacks. And every time they pushed back, I was, you know, calm and
respectful.
And I reflected back to them why that was not the case. And, you know, every time they're like, oh, yeah. And then so by the end, I'm like, oh, I forgot that you're just 19-year-old children. Yeah. Like, you're so impressionable.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's fun because, like, I get to kind of still keep a pulse on, like, I enjoy hearing the True Believing Mormon feedback to the issues that we talk about. And I also feel like I'm, you know, doing the reverse missionary thing and kind of telling them, well, this is how I feel. Like,
yeah.
Not to say that I'm the expert on everything, but I'm sharing with them my feelings.
Well, keep us updated on these wonderful, wonderful sister missionaries.
These beautiful interactions that I get once a week while my house gets cleaned. And I clean right along with them, so please don't think that I'm like, you know.
Put your feet up, criticize the religion.
That Joseph Smith. No, I don't do that. So yeah, it's good times. So the big topic of the week in Mormonism is the setting apart of a new first presidency with a new president and new counselors. So they were all set apart on January 14th, 2018.
So we've got Nelson, Oaks, and Eyring.
So the changes are obviously a new president. We have Russell M. Nelson. So President Nelson, I wanted to just give a really short bio on who he is, and then we can talk about what we think about him. So Nelson was born in Mexico, which I did not know that.
He was born in Mexico?
He was born in Mexico. Oh. I believe his parents were both citizens, but I don't know what they were doing in Mexico. If you would like more information, I'd be happy to post a link in the show notes.
Okay.
He was sustained a member of the Quorum of the Twelve on April 7th, 1984. He is a surgeon by trade. He went to school at the University of Utah. He is a cardiothoracic, which is another fancy way of saying a heart surgeon. And he is absolutely one of the most accomplished heart surgeons in the country, actually.
Wow. Which good for him.
Yeah. So,
surprise, surprise. He didn't go to BYU.
Right. Well, if you look at the educational background of a lot of the general authorities, it's U of U.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I thought was kind of surprising. I mean, it's not surprising. They got a better education. If they're successful, they probably went somewhere else. He also was enlisted in the army from 51 to 53. So woohoo, he served in the military. So that's pretty commendable. He has two eternal wives. His first wife is Dancelle White. He was married to her from 1945 to 2005 when she passed away. And his current wife is Wendy Watson, who he married 1 year later in 2006. So that's a point of interest, is that he's a polygamous man. And it's not uncommon. I mean, it's not unheard of for LDS men to be sealed to more than one wife. It's not unheard of, but I would say that it still is uncommon. I think the more common thing is for your second wife to be sealed just for time.
Really? I would say that the getting their first marriage canceled would be more common.
Oh, I don't think so.
I don't
at all.
Know. I'm
because
just
these
assuming.
In these situations, their wives have passed away.
Oh, okay.
So these aren't divorce.
Right.
So in cases,
so with Nelson, is Wendy Watson sealed to him for time?
No.
Or just for time and eternity?
Yes, time and eternity. They are sealed in the temple for time and eternity. So he has two. When he dies, he's guaranteed
two wives.
Dancelle and Wendy. Wives. He has two wives in heaven. Guaranteed.
Let's hope that Dancelle and Wendy get along, huh?
Right? Yay for polygamy! And poor Denzel has no idea about it. I mean, maybe they talked about it. We don't know. I did a lot of research on who is Nelson. And to be honest, he seems like a pretty bland dude. He doesn't have a whole lot of noteworthy things. The most noteworthy thing that I did find out about him and that I was reminded is that he is credited with authoring the November 2015 policy.
So he wrote it.
He wrote the exclusion policy, which identifies members of same-sex couples as apostates and their minor children as well, and disqualifies them from membership within the church. So that's pretty, and not only did he write it, but in a press conference regarding the policy, like a week or so later after the policy was released, he called it revelation.
Wow.
Which is huge, because now the church can't go back and change it, because that was revealed doctrine from God.
Yeah.
Basically, from what he said, that's the word of God. You can't go back and change the word of God.
Well, and it kind of makes sense that he would say that it's revelation, because he's the one who wrote it.
So there was a press conference right after they were set apart, or the first presidency was announced this week. The press conference involved some local but very prestigious media who asked him some pretty straightforward questions.
I wouldn't even say hard. No. They were just straightforward.
They were great questions. They didn't play hardball. They were straightforward, and that's about it. So the thing that I took the most from this conference is I thought it was very indicative of his character and the opinions that he holds, how he presented himself within that press conference. So the first thing that I noticed right off the bat is Peggy Fletcher Stack, who is a highly recognized and accomplished religion journalist. She writes commonly for the Salt Lake Tribune, but is nationally recognized for her work. So her question to the first presidency was, under President Monson, we saw some real advances towards gender equity, the lowering of the missionary age, especially for sisters, and also adding women to some of the executive committees, but the church leadership is still white, male, American. What will you do in your presidency to bring women, people of color, and international members into decision-making for the church? So this is the response from Nelson that really rubbed me the wrong way. This is his first response. That's a good question, Peggy. I hope I can be forgiven if I say I have a special place in my heart for you. I know your mother. I know your father. I know all four of your grandparents. And I know your family. Your missionary children who've distinguished themselves with wonderful service. So Peggy is special to me. Now, what was your question?
Wow.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
So
I'm so special, but you can't even remember or answer my question.
So this is the problem I have with that response. I think Nelson is kind of known for this, like, I remember when we made this personal connection back years ago, and remember we're friends?
Uh-huh.
And in this press conference that is completely inappropriate, it's unprofessional, and in this particular instance, because she's a woman, I feel like what he is doing is he's basically, in my mind, he's conveying the message, don't hurt me. Don't ask a question that's too hard for me to answer. Don't, you know, like, he's sending the message that we're friends. I know your family. So you can't go against that friendship by asking a hardball question.
I don't know. I don't necessarily agree with that. I feel like he's more being misogynistic. Absolutely. In that he's saying, oh, you're just a sweet woman that mm-hmm. I know. Oh, how wonderful. Yay. Oh, yay. Oh, you're so wonderful. And like, you couldn't possibly ask me a good question.
Right.
And ignoring her question because what do women have to say? Oh, mm-hmm. he doesn't care about women.
Right.
That's the feel I get from Absolutely. It. Not necessarily, even though it comes across as, you better watch out, Peggy. But I don't know if that's necessarily his
intent.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know if that's his intent. To me, I think his intent is more, let's brush off the women and tell them they're special, because mm-hmm. that's what the first presidency does.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And he showcases her role as a mother. And he talks about, I knew your grandparents, which I almost felt like that was a slight to her age. And I'm like, oh, dude, that just makes you look fucking ancient.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, you're so young. I know your grandparents. And it's like, no, you're just ancient, dude.
Yep. I mean, he's 93. So that to me was quite a telling reaction. He then went on to talk. He answered the question, which I think is definitely something that we need to focus on, his answer. His answer was, I'm paraphrasing, that the leadership of the church on the level that they are on is not a representative assembly. And how would you govern a church with representation from all 188 countries? Someone's going to be left out. But it doesn't matter because the Lord is in charge, and we will live to see the day when there are more flavors in the mix. We respond because we are called by the Lord. None of us asked to be here. And then Oaks, yeah, I don't okay. know, should we, let's just keep going, let's and then we can going. Talk about it. So then Oaks leans over and butts in, which I think is also very telling of the relationship between Nelson and Oaks, as they bounce things off one another. Don't label your nationality, avoid a quota system, is this basically the paraphrasing of his comment, is that he tells people to be careful labeling themselves and don't label yourself as being Latina or, you know, basically forget who you are, your nationality, and become one with all of us. Like, we are all children of God, so we're all the same.
I don't like that at all.
No. And then he says, and that will avoid this quota system. And so I'm like, dude, do you really think, like, that's how they look at diversity, is mm-hmm. as a, they look at it as a quota system. That's what he just said.
Yeah.
Is that he doesn't even, they are completely blind to the problems inherent in their white ass leadership. Yeah. Like, it is just a whitewash.
Yeah.
So that was really, really disappointing to me. And then off mic, Peggy has to say, what about the women? Because he completely didn't answer
that. Yeah.
And this is his response. This is my other favorite thing that he says. I love them.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious by both your wives.
But it was just so gross that he said that.
Yeah.
Oh, it just gave me the chills. And then he says, I have a special place in my heart for the women. And I'm like, okay, hold up. The women. Is this like the gays? Like, you have a special place in your heart for the gays?
You're right. You're right. It totally is.
I feel like it's this dehumanizing the women, the gays. Like, they're this group of people that they're not us.
Yeah.
They're apart from us.
Yeah.
The women. Ugh. So that really sucked. And then he went on to say, I often think to myself, how am I so lucky to get girls? He has nine daughters. And then he makes the statement, how am I so lucky to get girls? And I'm like, what? You get girls? Like, they're a gift to you? They're a possession?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't like the word get girls.
And, I mean, there's so many better ways to word this. If you're thankful that you have a lot of women in your life, mm-hmm. you can say, I'm thankful to have so many women in my life.
Right!
And so many women that influence me.
And that is not offensive.
Right. Come on.
And I guess this is my problem, is that I feel like what is coming out of his mouth is generational misogyny, that he doesn't know any other way to talk about women.
About women or to women, or how to include women.
Yes, all of those. And then going on with the answer, then Henry B. Eyring kind of like, you know, comes out of his catatonic state. And then he says, we need their influence. He's talking about women. And then he talks about that the place of women is in, you know, basically that the role of women is to be mothers. He talks about, my favorite quote from Eyring is he talks about how he has 4 sons and all of his sons are bishops. And the reason why they are all bishops is because they had a wonderful mother. And I'm like,
Yeah, I don't think so.
So that's like, that's all it.
That's all we're good for.
That's the most important thing that she's but capable
that is,
of.
That is what they believe. That is truly the Mormon point of view. I know this firsthand from myself. That's all they care about for you to do is be a mother.
And if your sons don't make it to bishop, then you're the one that
then you're
up.
In trouble. Right. All the blame is put on the mother. And that's mm-hmm. an issue for many people that I know, is that they're taking personal blame because their family members and their sons and daughters are not going to church.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm so sorry that you feel this way. It is mm-hmm. not your fault.
Allow people some autonomy and responsibility for their own lives and decisions. And then another interesting tidbit that is worth exploring is that right after, in part of entering this, they quote DNC 132, which if you haven't read DNC 132 lately, go back and read it. They literally fucking quote DNC 132.
Wow. They quote it. They bring it up.
They reference it and say that basically women are created to bear children. The end.
How I offensive. Kid you not.
That is the way that they answer that question. So that's kind of a problem that, I mean, that to me is the character of Nelson. If we're going to paint a picture of who the new president of the LDS Church is, that is Nelson. Nice to meet you. Next, we have Oaks, Dallin H. Oaks. He was born in Provo, Utah. So, hearkening back to the white male from Utah Valley.
Yeah, from Utah. Went to BYU.
He did go to BYU. He went to the BYU Law, and he also went to Chicago Law. He was also part of the National Guard from 49 to 54. Also did military service. He was sustained to the Quorum of the Twelve on April 7th, 84. If that date sounds familiar, it's because that's the exact day that Russell M. Nelson was also sustained to the Quorum. So they were sustained on the same day, which I think that's significant because, like, if you watch the news conference, you will see that they have this camaraderie, this, like...
Yeah.
They're buddies. They are definitely buddies. They have a relationship. Which, when we get to the Uchtdorf drama, I feel like that needs to be taken into account first. That Oaks and Nelson are very, very good friends. He was president of BYU-Idaho, which was Rick's college at the time, from 71 to 80. He was a member of the Supreme Court from 80 to 84.
Wow.
Yeah, I didn't realize that. So he was actually elected to the Supreme Court from 80 to 84. And the only reason that he ended that career as a Supreme Court justice is because he became an apostle in 84. Wow. So go back to that 4-7 of 84 date that he was sustained into the Quorum of the Twelve. That's when he ended his Supreme Court career. He also has two eternal wives.
Oh.
June Dixon from 1952 to her passing away in 1998. And his current wife is Kristen McMain from 2000 to present. So we have two members of the first presidency that are both polygamous.
Wonderful.
So I've mentioned before my Facebook group for ceiling cancellations. We're all in there trying to hash it out and figure out what we're doing. And this is very significant within that group because we're all trying to get our temple ceilings canceled. And the fact that, and those letters are signed by the first presidency.
Right.
It's the first presidency that makes those decisions. And so it's significant that now both two members of the first presidency are polygamous. It's going to put that emphasis on, you know, the eternal
aspect.
Yeah. The new and everlasting covenant, which is polygamy.
Yeah.
And so it's going to be a lot harder. We are fearing it's going to be a lot harder to have our ceilings canceled. It could be just one of those faith destroying rumors,
right?
Or opposite.
Right. We'll see what happens. It's kind of we'll see what happens, how things are handled. But with how things were handled concerning women in the press conference, I'm not going to assume anything good's going to happen for women.
Right. It's discouraging.
In the near future.
I did also want to say that I don't think for a minute that the first presidency is actually making these decisions, but their influence is going to have an effect.
Right.
So along with Oaks, we've kind of talked about his personal history, professional history, things like that. I did want to talk about his career accomplishments as a Quorum member, as a Quorum of the Twelve. So some recent things that I thought were significant is he recently did a face-to-face with Elder Ballard, where they were very bold regarding the church transparency, where they came out and basically, you know, were very clear in saying that the church does not and has not ever led someone astray or been untruthful about anything. We don't hide anything.
Right.
Which all of those statements are demonstrably false and can be proven
over and over.
8 ways to Sunday, they can be proven false. So that was really discouraging to hear from him. Like, okay, so he's a liar. He's a flat out liar. There's no way he doesn't know the history of the church.
Right.
He also wrote a brief on homosexuality, a legal brief, in May of 1986. Oaks gave the advice to parents of gay children to tell their children, yes, come, but don't expect to stay overnight. Don't expect to be a lengthy house guest. Don't expect us to take you out and introduce you to our friends or to deal with you in a public situation that would imply our approval of your partnership.
Wow.
And that was just, I believe in, this is on mormonnewsroom.org, so I will definitely put the link in our show notes. I want to say, this was in 2006 that he made this statement.
If you're looking at dates, it's old, it's not a recent thing, but there has been no improvement, there's been no progression on this front. There's been no changes, no I'm sorrys, no this is the new way, like this is how it is, this is what they do believe.
Mm-hmm. And this was an address from April 2005 entitled Pornography, where Dallin H. Oaks says, young women, please understand that if you dress immodestly, you are magnifying this problem by becoming pornography to some of the men who see you.
Because it's our problem, of course, to right. control what they think.
And objectifying our bodies and calling them pornographic, that's totally our fault.
Oh, absolutely. Ridiculous.
So it's disappointing to me that this is the caliber of an individual who will now be in the first presidency. He also, it's important to note that he also is the author of the Proclamation on the Family.
Oakes is.
Wow. And that is because the Proclamation on the Family is a legal brief that was created to provide precedence for the church to discriminate against same-sex, gender attraction, anything in the LGBT community. Basically, they use the Proclamation on the Family to say, this is a core belief of our religion. Therefore, you can't discriminate against our religious beliefs. We right. are going to be bigot assholes and you right. can't do anything about it.
Right.
So that's the purpose. Like, there is a very long buildup.
And this, I mean, when was that written? When was the Proclamation written? Like, what?
2008? No, the Proclamation.
The Proclamation.
That was
like 20 years ago. Yeah. And so I feel like for the past 20 years, they've been using this as an excuse. And so for the past mm-hmm. 20 years, their members have been indoctrinated to believe mm-hmm. that this is part of my religion. This is part of my core beliefs. And so if you don't go along with that, if you don't allow me to discriminate against you, then you're discriminating against me. And mm-hmm. that's entirely false.
Well, it goes back to the whole, like, you know, gay baker and the cake and yeah. who's discriminating against who argument. And
just, yeah.
Not nice to meet you, Oakes. And last but not least, we have Henry B. Eyring. He was born in New Jersey. He was sustained to the Quorum of the Twelve on April 1st, 1995. He's 84 years old. He's the youngest member of the Quorum. But let me tell you, I'm worried about that one.
Yeah.
I'm worried about his health. He was a counselor to Monson from 2008 to 2018. That's a long 10 years.
Yeah.
He was also a counselor to Gordon B. Hinckley from 07 to 08. That's not very long. And...
yeah, I remember when he got put in with Hinckley.
What?
I think the other guy died, didn't he?
Oh, I don't remember. That sounds about right.
I'm pretty sure the other guy died, and so they put in Eyring.
Oh, that makes sense. I was attending at that time. Yeah. He served in the Air Force from 1955 to 57, so he also was had some military service. He was president of BYU-Idaho from 1971 to 77. He was a professor at Stanford in business, and he has one wife and one wife only, and her name is Kathleen Johnson. And I actually don't know if she has passed away. I don't think she has. I think she's still around. So one thing I was concerned about after watching the press conference, if you haven't gotten a chance to look at that, I'm putting a link in the show notes. I definitely encourage you to check out that press conference and watch Eyring when he is not talking.
Yeah, it's a little weird. It's
weird.
Borderline scary. You're like, he's sitting there with his mouth wide open, just staring straight ahead, not moving, not blinking. You just want someone to go up and poke him and... you know, make sure he's still breathing.
It's scary. And the look on his face is like this, like, cheery, childlike, just vacant trance.
Yeah, it looks creepy.
Yeah, it's sad. And when he speaks, he sounds like he's all there, but man, he doesn't look good. And he's the youngest member, so, I mean.
Well, I find it interesting that he's the youngest member, and this is his third prophet that yeah. he's been in the first presidency mm-hmm. for.
Mm-hmm.
I find that interesting.
So, moving right along, because I really couldn't find a whole lot of controversial things coming out of Eyring. I feel like he's kind of passive.
In the public's eye, anyway.
Kind of like a Monson. Passive. But the most controversial thing about this entire secession, usually it's not so dramatic, but this time there was a little bit of a shakeup. So, the last time a healthy surviving member of the first presidency was not retained as a counselor, this is courtesy of the Reddit user Mormon Woman. The last time was because he wanted to end the racist priesthood ban, and that individual was Elder Hubie Brown, and he was not retained in 1970. Speculation at the time and since was that it was because of his vocal push to end the priesthood ban, and that's against blacks. He also apparently questioned whether Joseph Fielding Smith was fit to serve as president due to his health, which apparently some of the apostles didn't like. The only other time a surviving member was not retained was in 1985. Marion G. Romney was not retained because he was in very poor health and had already been not active in his position. So it's significant that Dieter Uchtdorf was not called back to the presidency because it hasn't happened since 1970.
And because this guy was so forward-thinking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that Uchtdorf is more forward thinking than other apostles. Mm-hmm. But to be quite frank, he's still one of the first presidency. He's still in the Quorum of the Twelve. He is still a Mormon leader who is against women's rights, racist on many occasions, and against homosexuals.
Yeah, absolutely. And whether he's doing it implicitly or, you know, explicitly, you know, whether he's just,
yeah.
Unless he's just a complicit member or not, it doesn't make a difference because he's still a part of it.
Yeah.
So the fact that he was released and moved back down to the Quorum of the Twelve has a lot of ex-Mormons quite disappointed, because a lot of people attach this progressive maverick identity to their beloved Silver Fox.
Yeah.
I will say that I like the guy. I like him.
Mm-hmm.
I like his tone. I like his approach. I always enjoyed his talks. I can't really identify anything that he has said, any quotes attributed to Uchtdorf that were like cringeworthy and offensive. He has
there are some, though.
I'm sure there are. But he lacks the cringe factor that a lot of other members of the Quorum have. He has a better approach. A lot of people have compared him to Pope Francis, I believe. He's not changing church doctrine, but he's approaching it with a different tone and he's saying different things. I'd really like to hear your feedback on this, listeners. I mean, what do you feel like? This is a legitimate controversy? Is this an actual, taking into account the relationship between Nelson and Oakes, taking into account the historical precedence that was set back in 1970 for the reason why someone wasn't called back to the first presidency. I mean, do we have a story here or do we not? And I think it's an interesting conversation because I'm not sure that we do. But a lot of people disagree with me out there. So I talked to my sister missionaries that came this week to help me do my dishes. And I asked them about the Uchtdorf controversy and what their thoughts were on, you know, why he wasn't called back to the first presidency. And their thoughts are, we haven't really thought about it. Which I thought was significant. And then I remembered that, oh, yeah, that's right. Men don't make these decisions. God makes these decisions.
Right.
So it was God who called Nelson and moved Uchtdorf back to the Quorum. It was God that moved Uchtdorf back to the Quorum and brought up Oakes instead.
Right.
And why would they question that? They're not going to. And it's also God that makes the decision that all 15 members of the Quorum of the Twelve in the first presidency are white. That's God's decision to rule his church with white geriatric men. That's God's decision, not the church's decision.
Right.
They're just following what God wants.
Sad.
It sounds to me like God's a bit of a racist.
I couldn't agree more.
And
the Mormon God is definitely racist.
And a homophobe.
And a homophobe. And a misogynistic.
And has no... yeah. And has no... he says that he's all about family, yet he's the first one to rip families apart when one of them's gay.
Right, exactly.
So what are your thoughts? Let us know on Facebook, Twitter, wherever. Brandon, do you have any final thoughts about anything we talked about?
My final thoughts are, it's good to be an ex-Mo.
Hell yeah!
What about you, Colleen? Do you have any final thoughts?
I think Oreos are a great addition to sacrament meeting, and that you should definitely lock your door.
Mm-hmm.
And always respond with spite to anyone who leaves shit on your front door when you are a resigned member of the church. Love that. And I cannot wait until all of this Monson death obituary secession drama is over and we can go back to picking our topics ourselves.
Yeah.
So let us know what you want us to talk about. I'm tired of all this drama deciding it for us. feel free to find us in our Facebook group that we have a ton of fun posting inappropriate memes and having great chit-chatty conversation.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And also getting lots of feedback on our episodes. So it's a great conversation. We're here to entertain you, and we're not here to tell you that we are the be-all, end-all opinion on all these topics.
We're definitely not.
This is just our thoughts, and we want to hear yours, so let us know. We are also on Twitter as Mormon Happy Hour, Instagram Mormon Happy Hour, and look for us on Reddit, because man, Reddit's a tough place.
It is.
And any visibility that we can get to help us kind of get feedback for our show, we appreciate. So watch for us.
And thanks for your participation on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Reddit. It's been fantastic.
Absolutely. We've had a lot of fun. We can't wait to have more. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Mormon Happy Hour.
Cheers.